Well, I want to wish you a very happy new year. This is Kip Laxon with the podcast Faith Matters Today. And I hope you had a very meaningful and warm Christmas, and that we begin this new year of 2023 with much expectation. I pray God's richest blessings upon you during this new year. And I thank you for joining me for this podcast once again. I've taken a break, as I said, over the Christmas holiday in my last podcast. I said I'd be back after the new year. And so here we are. And we are now approaching the culmination of Christmastide. You know, a lot of people think that Christmas is over when you reach Christmas Day. But actually, in Christian liturgy and history, that's actually the beginning of Christmas. Christmas begins on Christmas Day. Advent is, of course, the preparation for the celebration of the birth of Christ. And then that celebration in the great festival of Christmastide continues from Christmas Day until the Epiphany. And this coming Sunday, January the 8th, here at Muncie Memorial United Methodist Church, where I am the senior pastor, we will be celebrating the Epiphany. Now, what is the Epiphany? The Epiphany is the commemoration of the visit of the Magi, or what are known traditionally as the three wise men. And I want to talk about that in this particular podcast and look at some issues related to the Magi and why we call them Magi. But before I do that, I just want to share a little context with you. And when I do this, I'm giving you context about how I think about these issues and things that have molded and shaped my life over the years. When I was just first in college, in my freshman year, I was doing a degree in religion and biblical studies, getting ready to go to seminary once I'd followed college, preparing for the ministry. I well knew by then that I was going to be in the ministry. And so I was preparing for all of that, and I had taken some classes that first semester in biblical studies, in particularly study in the Gospels themselves. We first began to learn how to exegete the passages. I was taking Greek classes then and in the Greek language, and so that I could become an interpreter and a translator of the original language of the New Testament. And I was just filled with all kinds of information, things that I had not learned or did not know about the Gospels themselves in the New Testament. And when I got home for Christmas break that year, my house was just, you know, decorated to the hilt. Mom had so excited that I was coming home from college, and her firstborn in his first year of college was coming home, and all the trees were decorated, and I mean, every room was just getting ready for the festivities of the Christmas season. And Mom had all of her nativity scenes displayed throughout the house. My mom collects nativity scenes from her travels around the world, and they come in all shapes and sizes and types and styles, and she just had them displayed everywhere. And one evening after I'd gotten home and we were eating dinner together, and I was just, you know, overflowing with such information that I had learned about the New Testament, and I just informed very abruptly my mom as I looked around, gave my kind of a sweeping gesture with my hand at all these nativity scenes, and I said, "Hey, Mom, you know, the Bible doesn't tell us that there were three wise men. Bible only tells us that there were three gifts, but doesn't tell us how many wise men there were." And my mom just kind of sat there with that look on her face for a moment, and then she got really frustrated and said, "What are you talking about? And look, you know, this is traditionally we have the three wise men and the nativity plays in our church." And I said, "Yeah, but you know, the Bible doesn't tell us that." And I was so confident and so cocky and so full of information. I felt so proud of myself of having this great secret. And in frustration, my mom grabbed several figurines from these different nativity scenes and shoved a bunch of the wise men together. I said, "Well, how many wise men would make you happy? You want 10, 20, 15? What do you want put together?" And I said, "No, Mom, that's not the point." What I realized in that moment was that I touched something very sacred in the nativity itself, that we depict the Holy Family, Mary, Joseph, the baby Jesus, the shepherds, the wise men. Countless untold thousands upon thousands of children have donned their father's bathrobe and a crown that they got from Burger King back in the day when you could get a paper crown and spray painted gold and glue some fake emeralds to it, and you had suddenly become one of the wise men in the nativity play at church. Nothing wrong with that. But there also is the other side to discern and learn about what these stories are really all about, and what the Bible really tells us and what the Bible doesn't tell us. Does it really matter how many wise men there were? Not to me, it doesn't. But of course, it took my mom some time to process, and of course, she eventually began to realize, and we got the Bible out together and said, you know, it's true. We assume that there are three wise men, and we depict the three wise men in the Nativity because of the three gifts that they brought. But the Bible doesn't tell us how many wise men there were. Actually, it would have probably been unlikely in that day that only three people by themselves would have traveled a great distance. There could have been a caravan. Maybe they were 10 wise men. And then there's the speculation that we know their names from ancient church history. Some have named these three kings: Caspar, Balthazar, Melchior, however you want to say it. And that could be true. That's certainly a part of our Christian tradition. But I say all this to simply kind of build up as a catalyst what I want to launch into as we approach the Epiphany of what do we know and what do we not know about these three mysterious visitors from the exotic East who came bearing gifts to the Christ child. Let's talk about that for a few moments. First of all, where does the idea of the Magi come from? Well, it comes from the ancient word. In the standard Greek English lexicon, the word Magi or Magoi is used to depict the wise men. It actually is the word magician. Now, when we think of a magician, we think of a trickster, someone who uses illusion to entertain us. In that day and time, the time of the New Testament when the Gospel of Matthew was written, the Christmas story in Matthew, in Matthew chapter 1 and chapter 2, tell us about his particular narrative of the birth of Christ. He uses the word magi, the magicians who came from the East. But the word magician, as it's used in that context, refers to astrologers. These were ancient astrologers who professionally studied the stars, and it was very common in that day and time for visitors who had studied the alignment of the stars through the ancient practice of astrology and had discerned that some great event had taken place or was going to take place. Now, we don't really know any more detail about them, of what we're given in the second chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. It is interesting that this word magi shows up in one other place in the New Testament. In the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 13, there was a Jewish false prophet, and he is referred to in the Greek text as a magi, or a sorcerer, or a magician. But this term was used loosely at the time of Jesus. What it really points to is that there are people who were inquiring in understanding the times. They were not charlatans or rogues or bandits of any sort. These were considered scientists of that day and time. Astrologers were considered very intelligent people, thus the idea of the wise. They had great wisdom to understand through the movement of the stars and the alignments of the planets, through the ancient art of astrology, to discern things that were going to be happening. And that's, of course, what these magi are depicted as doing in the Christmas narrative in the Matthew's Gospel, that they had, according to the alignment of the stars, the planets, discerned that the birth had taken place, that a king had been born. And it was common in those days for royal visitors to pay a visit at the birth of another king, to pay homage, to worship, if you will, this king that was being born. None of that was unusual for the time. But a part of the Christmas story itself, these magi, these magicians, these wise persons came into the story for the purpose of bearing witness to the birth of this special child. So that's the first thing we know, and what we don't know about these wise men. these magi. Another thing is that we know that there was at least two. There were more than one. As the Greek text translates magicians or astrologers, which is probably a more accurate translation of the word magi or magoi, it's in the plural form. Magi in the ancient Greek would have been a single person, individual. Magoi would refer to the plural, and those words are used interchangeably. So we know that the magicians, plural, astrologers, plural, refers to more than one. So there were at least two, if not more, of these individuals, these magi, who came. Now, that brings up this issue. If there this more than one of these magi, these visitors from far away, were they kings? One of my favorite Christmas carols and that we will sing on Epiphany, We Three Kings of Orient Are, has an ominous sound to it. The meter of the music is inviting. You can almost imagine as you're singing and picture these mysterious magi traveling far on their camels across the desert sands to come to worship this newborn king. In reality, though, they're not kings. The Bible never names them kings, at least not in the New Testament. Again, it's the word magi, astrologers. So where do we get the idea that they were kings, three kings? Well, this comes from the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, and the book of Isaiah, chapter 60. Isaiah, in prophesying or predicting or imagining the Messiah child that would be coming, refers in the 60th chapter of Isaiah that they would be kings who would bear gifts of gold and frankincense to the new Messiah, to this one promised child who is coming. Now, following the birth of Jesus, it was important, and then following his resurrection, crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension, the writers of these New Testament Gospels, it was important, particularly for the writer of Matthew, because of the Jewish context of that gospel and the fact that Matthew begins his gospel with the genealogy of Jesus. It was important for the writer of the Gospel of Matthew to link the activities of Jesus, i.e. his birth in this context, to the ancient prophecies in Israel, the prophecies of Isaiah in particularly, who had much to say about this coming promised child, this anointed one, this Emmanuel, who would be God with us. And so they begin then to go back into the ancient scriptures of Judaism and look at these voices from the past who prophesied about the coming child. And so when you read in the 60th chapter of the book of Isaiah that these kings would bring gifts of gold and frankincense, and then you come to Matthew's account in Matthew 2 about these magi who came bearing gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh, the linkage is made between the kings that are spoken of in Isaiah and the magi who are spoken of in Matthew's gospel. Thus they became three kings from Orient Are. Well, the idea of kings coming to pay homage or honor to the birth of a new king was not unusual, but we don't have really any verification outside of Isaiah 60 that the kings were actually what they were. Rather, Matthew's use of the astrologers is probably more accurate, particularly as you read the narrative together and see about the star and how they followed that and what all that meant and how King Herod became frustrated with them and sent them away to find the child. Most biblical scholars would recognize that if these had been three kings in the literal sense of royalty, King Herod would not have dismissed them out of hand. He would not have simply told them, well, go find the child. When you find him, come and tell me where he is. I want to go and worship him too. King Herod would have been more accommodating, more conciliatory to these had they been royalty. But had they been astrologers, he acts more in line with that, not trusting them much, bringing in his own court astrologers or his own court leaders, his own court wisdom teachers to see, do you know anything about this? This would have not have been activities of King Herod had these three been actual kings of foreign lands. Who knows for sure? Brings us to another issue that we know, that we do not know, about these mysterious magi. And that is, they are said to have come from the east. You're probably picking up on the fact that Matthew is pretty opaque about what he shares when it comes to the birth of Jesus. He doesn't give a lot of information. Many interpreters try to fill in the biblical picture by using this clue that they came from the east, these wise men, these magi, from the east. Well, where is east? Of course, we know now that east, north, south, east, west is all relative because we're on a ball, a planet that is round. In those days, of course, they believed the earth to be flat. That doesn't mean they were ignorant or stupid in any sense. It's just they had a different cosmological view, and it colored the way they talked about things, the way they interpreted things. In this instance, if you look at the land of Judea at the time of the birth of Christ, east or the far east for a person living at that time and place would have been most likely Persia. These Persian astrologers, which Persia is today modern what we call Iraq, or the ancient land of Babylon, during the days of the Old Testament in the Hebrew Bible, the Babylonian captivity that predated Jesus, and that still that history was very much alive among the Jewish people at the time of the birth of Jesus, and even as he became an adult. The Babylonian captivity that had happened years prior that led to the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. The east would have been Babylon, ancient Persia. And it's also known that eastern Persians at the time of Jesus were very, very much into, as we would say today, astrology. So there were astrologers. Astrology was practiced as a science in ancient Persia. There's also a connection for those that are interested in this kind of thing and pursuing it deeper, that Babylon is given great prominence in the Hebrew Bible and is used to refer to the people from the east, the ancient Babylonians, which places it in, of course, ancient Iraq. It is interesting that when Saddam Hussein came to power many years ago in Iraq, which of course led then to the Gulf War in the 1990s, he saw himself as resurrecting or rebuilding the glories of ancient Babylon. Was that where the Magi came from? Who knows for sure? Could have been farther east than that, or could have been from a country or a place that we don't know anything about today that has long since disappeared with the passing of history. Another thing that we know about the Magi is their purpose. They came to worship. The ancient King James talks about they came to pay homage to the Christ child, and they opened their treasures and offered them to him. They came with a purpose. They weren't just on a road trip, as it were, or sightseeing, but they were there for the purpose of worshiping this one who had been born king. It's interesting that they arrived in a different place and time from the actual birth narrative that we have in St. Luke's Gospel. This is often lost on people that don't study closely the Christmas stories. In Luke's account, we have the birth of Jesus at the manger. The shepherds hear the angelic message. They receive what the angels say to them. They immediately go to Bethlehem to see this great thing that's come to pass. And they're there at the time, roughly shortly after the birth of the baby, of the Christ child. But in Matthew's account, we have two distinguishing characteristics. One, it clearly says at the beginning of Matthew's story, in the second chapter of Matthew, that they came after the birth of Christ. It also says that they came to the house where the child was. This is different than the manger scene that we have in Luke's gospel. But it's not contradictory. Some people have tried to build, well, Luke has a different Christmas story than the one Matthew tells, and these cannot be reconciled. But they actually can be balanced in understanding that the shepherds were there at the birth of Christ, and the Magi came later to the house, to the child. The use of the word for infant, as we have it in Luke's gospel, and the way he being the gospel writer of Matthew, speaks of the child, distinguishes between an infant that you would hold or rock in your arms and a toddler or a small child that is beyond infant stages. This is what is depicted in Matthew's gospel. So the Magi, though we place them in the nativity scene, and nothing wrong with that, all included together, they actually came later, most likely, after the birth of Christ and after the events related to the manger and the shepherds. They came later, bearing gifts to the child. Now, what about these gifts? That brings us to something that's always intriguing for many people. The gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. What do we know and what do we not know about these gifts? Well, there's been much speculation and fun speculation about what the significance is, the spiritual significance of these gifts. And we have to recognize that it is easy to spiritualize these gifts in a way that give them a certain significance that has kind of a prophetic value to them or somehow prefigures what is going to happen in the life of Jesus. For instance, I've heard people speculate that the gold is a gift that's worthy for a newborn king. The frankincense and the myrrh prefigure the perfume that was used on a body, someone who had died, prefiguring the death of Jesus. The myrrh would prefigure the crucifixion of Jesus. Who knows if that's really the meaning? I'm not saying that's not possible. I'm simply saying that the Gospel of Matthew doesn't tell us that. What the Gospel of Matthew does tell us is that these were treasured gifts. And here's what we do know. The gold and frankincense and myrrh would have not been a regular commodity that a couple like Mary and Joseph from a peasant village like Nazareth, living in the land of Judea at that time, dominated and oppressed by the ancient Romans, first and foremost, second by King Herod himself, who levied taxes at a 50 to 60% level upon the average person living in the land of Judea at the time of the birth of Christ. To put it bluntly, Mary and Joseph would have not had gold, frankincense, and myrrh just laying around the house in Nazareth. No, these were gifts of great significance, something that they would not have had, and something that would have been commonly brought by people like the Magi, or the three kings, if you will, when they brought their gifts. This is something that you would give that would have been an appropriate gift for the birth of a king, which adds to the mystery of when they got to town, referring to Jerusalem, they're coming to worship a newborn king. Where would they go? They assumed that Herod had a new son. And so when they go to see King Herod, he, of course, doesn't. And he wants to know who this new king is. And he tells them, you go and find him, and when you find him, come and tell me. Well, they go find him. They were, of course, paying due diligence and honoring and recognizing the role of Judea's king, Herod the Great. They go see him, which would have been protocol at that time. He dismisses them and tells them to go find the child. They do. They locate the child. They come and bring their gifts. And then, of course, the story goes that they were warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, and they didn't. And then in anger and frustration, when they do not return and Herod discovers that he's been tricked, he orders the slaughter of all boy babies under 2 years old throughout the land of Judea. A brutal and wicked tyrant, he was, no doubt, a despot of the most evil capacity. But the gifts themselves that the Magi brought were for a newborn king. And when Herod rejected them or either sent them onward, they took those gifts and gave them to Christ. I think the bottom line is here, it was the best that they had to offer. And rather than attach some special significance to the gifts or to spiritualize the meaning behind these gifts, is to recognize that they were doing what was proper to do in that day, and that was to give the best that they had to this newborn king. One other issue that I want to mention that always intrigues us about the Magi and the story that we have in Matthew's gospel is the star. I remember as a child hearing the Christmas story, and particularly toward the time of Epiphany when we would commemorate the visit of these Magi, these wise men, and you'd imagine them following the star. And that's, of course, been caricatured in so many ways in art and sculpture and painting and drawings and stories and songs and carols about how they followed the star. And the star, of course, led them across the desert plains from the ancient east to Bethlehem, and how the star stopped over the house where the child was, and they went in and opened their gifts to the Christ child. One of the problems with that, of course, is that we know that stars, in that sense, don't just move across the sky in the way that it seems to simplistically imply in Matthew's account. Of course, we also have to recognize that their understanding of how the world worked, how the cosmos functioned in that day, was different. There was no space travel. There were no space stations. There were no telescopes in the way that we understand telescopic investigation in our day. So their understanding was limited. However, it's unfair to think that they could not, meaning the Magi, astrologers from the East, that they could have not have followed the ancient art of astrology. At that time, it was advanced. It's only ancient because it's so far behind us. But in those days, they were on the cutting edge of astrological investigation and scientific knowledge, and they could have had a way of following the astrological projections and determining that something special, significant, a child of great significance was going to be born. That we must acknowledge. It was a common occurrence in those days. Well, so what is the star all about? How did that work? Some people have dismissed that out of hand, as if to say, was there really a bright star more than 20 centuries ago that guided these Magi from the east to the Christ child in Bethlehem? Was that really what happened? And they say no. And they dismiss that out of hand as an ancient metaphor that the gospel writer is using, perhaps challenging us to be more faithful in following the ways of God, and that God uses the natural world as to show us the way when we're confused, we've lost our way in our life. Now, there's certainly validity to that kind of approach as far as finding a metaphorical and spiritual meaning in the images of the star. But to simply dismiss it that way, I think, is to sell ourselves short. Some speculated, on the other hand, trying to find a historical foundation, or at least some kind of verification for what the Magi may have experienced in the star, that this was Halley's Comet, that what they were actually doing was following a moving comet that we refer to now today as Halley's Comet. And that's true in that Halley's Comet was first seen around 240 BCE, based on my research, and I'm certainly no astronomer, but what I read and what I try to understand in my limited capacity is that what we call Halley's Comet was first noticed or noted, notations taking on it about 240 BCE, and that it reappeared years later in 12 BCE. But I don't think that that explains it in a classical way that we can fully get our minds around, because people who have better knowledge of that than I say that that's probably not the kind of celestial display that would have guided them that far or that great a distance or kept them interested in long enough. So what would it have been? A group of astronomers have proposed that really what it was more likely to have been was what they call a celestial display that is known as a conjunction. Now, this was new for me, may not be for you, but let me just explain what this may have been. A conjunction, or what is a close approach of planets in the sky, I understand, are common occurrences. And they take place at periodic intervals as planets orbit the sun at different angles and different velocities, and they seem or they appear to kind of run close together. They come into conjunction. Now, the reason some biblical scholars and historians say that this kind of celestial display could account for St. Matthew's reference to the star in his Christmas narrative in Matthew chapter 2 is that because somewhere around 7 BCE, there was a display like this. And those who studied the stars recognized that in May of 7 BCE, the planet Jupiter, which, by the way, at that time of the birth of Jesus, astrologers considered the planet Jupiter a royal star, meaning that as they followed the planet Jupiter in an astrological way, it signified something of great royalty occurring. For instance, the birth of a newborn king, a royal occurrence. That in May of 7 BCE, the planet Jupiter came close to what we know as Saturn. And some astrologers and biblical scholars speculate that this conjunction was the signal that the Magi had followed. Now, who knows if that's true or not, but it is fun to speculate. And I like that one better than the idea of Halley's Comet. And Halley's Comet, because, you know, there were several years before the earliest date on which Jesus could have been born. And as you look at this conjunction in 7 BCE, that's closer to the time that we understand the birth of Christ occurring. And maybe in years to come, we will discover something else that helps us better understand the star that led the Magi from the east to where the child was. As Matthew chapter 2, verse 9 says, "When they heard the king," meaning King Herod, "they departed. And the star, which they had seen in the east, went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was." What were they really following? What did they see? What was their understanding? Who knows? But either way, it led them to the Christ child, even though we cannot know the particulars for sure. So what does all this mean as we prepare for Epiphany? We celebrate, commemorate the visit of the Magi. Here's what I think it says to us in a deeper way. Though we cannot know all the details, and we certainly don't have all the information we'd like to have, what we know is this, that these mysterious travelers set out on a journey. They did not know the destination, but they faithfully persevered. And in persevering on that journey, they came to where the Christ was. They had opportunity to offer him these gifts, the best that they had, things that they had brought with them on the journey or purchased on the way, perhaps. It was their testimony of saying, "We recognize that God is doing something unique in this birth and that the world will be different because of the birth of this child. And here are our gifts, our testimony, our way of saying that we receive it, we're excited about it, and we recognize it as a God event." Saying that points us to the reason why the ancient church, in building their liturgical calendar, put the Epiphany at the beginning of the new year. This new year that is out before us is like the journey of the Magi. We are setting out on a year that we do not know its destination. Neither you or I know what will happen in this new year. We don't know the loved ones that may have gathered around our table this past Christmas for the last time. They may not be there this next Christmas. We do not know the financial challenges that we may face. We do not know the health issues that may arise, the tragedies in the world that may occur. I could go on, but what I'm saying is that this new year lays out before us filled with such tremendous possibility and opportunity that if we keep our eyes focused for us on the star, on the Christ, on the direction that God is taking us, and we are willing to go, we are willing to put one foot in front of another, looking at each day as the gift that it is, and at the same time offering our best in service to Christ, then this year will be what God wants it to be, God's preferred future for us. The Magi always challenge me to trust God a little bit more, to give a little bit more, and to offer myself to where God wants to take me in this brand new year. I would love to sit around a table with God and say, okay, before I step out there, I'd like to know the destination. Where exactly are we going? But then, of course, that would not be faith, would it? Trusting God with this new year is a way of saying, okay, God, in my life, though I do not know where I'm going exactly, and I cannot be prepared for everything that happened down the road and around the bend, the one thing I know is that if I stay focused on you, give the best that I have, you will be with me every step of the way. I want to thank you for joining me for this Epiphany podcast. And I hope if you are in the Johnson City area and you would like to be in worship, I'd love to meet you in person. Come and join us here at Muncie Memorial United Methodist Church. Worship services at 8:45 and 11 a.m. each Sunday. Come and celebrate the Epiphany with us. Bring the best that you have, no matter who you are or where you're from or where you are on the journey of faith. We'd love to have you join us. We don't have all the answers, but we are willing to join you in asking the important questions of what it means to be a person of spiritual value today, what it means to really offer ourselves to Christ, what it really means to be a part of the church. Come and join us, either in person or through the live stream on our website at muncie.org. That's M-U-N-S-E-Y.org. I'd love for you to join me in worship. Once again, I thank Ed, and I thank Brett, and I thank John, three great friends, staff members here at Muncie, for their technological support and their help in making this podcast possible. I will look forward to seeing you next week as we set out together on a great journey in 2023. God bless you, and I will join you again soon.